I never knew that you could train a cat. So I'm just there by myself in the kitchen with a cat jumping a meter from stool to stool between a hoop. And I just started laughing.
Join us as we chat to amazing cat explorers and experts. Learn from them, listen to their war stories, celebrate their wins, and laugh at the funny moments that have been a part of their journey. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Cat Explorer podcast. I'm Hasara.
And I'm Daniel. Before we jump into today's exciting chat, we would love it if you could screenshot this podcast, post it on your Instagram stories, and tag us at catexplorer.community and our awesome guest at VanCatMeow. We'll reshare it in our stories, and we can't wait to hear what you think of today's episode. We'd love to thank our amazing sponsor, Superkit.
There are those moments when we might go exploring by ourselves with our kitties. This means that we have to put their harness on by ourselves.
In these moments, we find that we are holding the kitty in one hand and only have one hand to put their harness on. What we loved about the Superkit harness was that this is completely possible.
We can easily put our kitty's paws through the strap and clip it together at their shoulder.
You can get your own Superkit harness at superkit.co.
Today's guest's book, VanCatMeow, is a story about a midlife crisis and changing it into a midlife opportunity. Together, Richard and his cat Willow have been vanning around Australia and seeing its amazing sights. I love hearing about the different views they see, the variance between the different locations, and all the animals and people they meet. And I'm so excited to chat to Rich today. Welcome to the podcast, Rich.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Cool. So you're known as the Aussie who's traveling around Australia with your cat, but I'd like to jump a little bit into your life before that. Do you mind telling us what you were doing before you started vanning and how you came to the decision to change your lifestyle?
Yeah, so I guess you could say life was very different before. In 2014, I quit my job and sold my house, and we got a van and converted it basically into a little tiny house on wheels. And yeah, since then, we've been traveling around Australia. But yeah, before then, I had the office job, I had, you know, the house, and I guess some would call it the Australian dream. But yeah, what I didn't have was happiness.
Mm. Wow, that's definitely a transformation from one life to another. You mentioned about prepping your van and converting it. Could you just talk us a little bit about how you started doing that and what the realities of preparing to live in a van are? Because a lot of people have that, you know, fanciful notion and have that desire to live that van life, but they may not know where to start.
Yeah, it's it took a fair bit of work to sort of figure out how I'd sort of execute the plan. And yes, it sounds like it could have been like a, you know, a bit of a midlife, well, it was a midlife crisis, but sort of a spur of the moment thing. But I like to call it the most well orchestrated midlife crisis ever. So yeah, there was a lot of planning and spreadsheets and, you know, all that stuff to figure out before it happened. So yeah, I had like software to design the inside of the van, and I had all my budget sorted out and all that stuff. So are we talking, do you want to know about like how I made the van, or?
Yeah, if you could talk us briefly through, like, you know, what's the van life look like? You know, is there a toilet in there? Is there a kitchen?
Oh, yeah. Bed? Okay. Yeah.
And how does it all come together? Because you do explain a bit about it in page 45 of your book that you've got out. But just if you can give us a high level overview of
what that would look like. Yeah, the vehicle I've got is a T5 transporter. And when I got it, it was just an empty shell. And so I'd had vans previous to this, so I sort of had a bit of experience in sort of what I wanted to build. And, fitted it out with, a bed, cupboards to put all my gear, and a little kitchen. And it's, I guess some would call it rough. For me, it's a 4-star hotel room on wheels. But, you know, there's no shower, there's no toilet. I'm reliant on, you know, showering in the creek or in the ocean, or finding a hot shower somewhere. So in a way it's roughing it, but for me it feels like absolute luxury.
And to be honest, you get to go to these beautiful places, so you can go shower in the creek or something like that. So I think I suppose to a certain degree you might be roughing it, but you're seeing all these beautiful things and experiencing all these amazing things. So I don't think in that way that you're roughing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, the places we get to go, it's just incredible. And, you know, you drive past the five-star resorts who are, you know, 100 metres from the beach, and then you just park right on the beach. And, yeah, you can't help but think that life is pretty good.
Yeah.
The next level experience, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. So I love how you take Willow on the road with you. Can you tell us a little bit about Willow?
Yeah, so Willow was a rescue cat, and we adopted her in, I think, 2012. And, you know, she settled into suburban life, much as I was at the time. And, you know, she was the sweetest little cat. She always has a curious tail, I like to call it. So when she's, she has a tail which looks like a question mark as a little ode to her curiosity.
Love but, that.
Yeah, so we just had the suburban life, and when I was sort of making these plans to go around Australia, I didn't quite know where she fitted in with it. So it wasn't until, like, you know, a few months before I was meant to leave that I figured, you know, she's always been there for me, and, you know, I made the promise not to leave her behind, so I took her with me.
That's awesome. Did you have to prepare her in any way to go on the road with you?
Yeah, so this was before van catting was a thing, and, you know, there weren't all the Instagram accounts on cat exploring. So, like, for me, it was a very new thing. I didn't know it was possible. And the inspiration I had to go on was Robert from Kathmandu. Do you know? Didger and Boomer, who live on the Gold Coast. So these are two cats which have been trained up by their owner to do all these little tricks. And I was inspired by this. So I started doing tricks with Willow, and we didn't do anything. We didn't sort of progress with it that much, but it was enough for me to sort of realize that she could adapt and we'd be able to make it work on the road. We'd be able to, you know, sort of conquer any problems that came about.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, I love watching what Didger can do. Like, I think he has the world record for the most tricks done in a certain amount of time, which is pretty cool.
yeah.
When you taught Willow those tricks, did you use, like, clicker training or treats or anything like that?
Yeah. So Robert had, I think he mentioned the clicker. Mm-hmm. This was before cat school, unfortunately. Yeah. So the amazing resource that is cat school. But yeah, so I got a clicker, and first I put her in a harness, and yeah, I got her to go to the target with a click, and then mm-hmm. I'd have her following me all around the house. So we'd just go from one end of the house to the other. And then it wasn't long before I sort of got her to turn around, to sit, to lie down. And then the grand finale was jumping from one kitchen stool to the other through a hoop.
Oh, that sounds very good.
Yeah. That's quite
a progression for her. And
it made me realize that, you know, she can adapt and it would work out all right. But it was rather comical, because I never knew that you could train a cat. So I'm just there by myself in the kitchen with a cat jumping a meter from stool to stool between a hoop. And I think I just started laughing because it was just so absurd.
So then in your preparations for taking Willow on the road, you mentioned, or, you know, doing these tricks and practices with Willow that sort of helped prepare her, as well as getting her in harnesses and leash and so forth. Was there anything that you, looking back now, you think, oh, that would have been a good skill to give or to teach her, or that's something that she lacked, you know, based on the experience and practice afterwards, that you thought, oh, that could have been a good idea?
Not really. I was very lucky in how she did adapt, but it wasn't a case that, you know, the vans, I've completed the conversion on the van, put the cat in the van, let's go. It was a very slow process. So we'd go for little trips, you know, day trips and then weekends and then weeks away. So, you know, it was a very slow progression. And during that time, we sort of figured out what we needed, you know, what she needed to be happy, what she needed to live on the road. So, yeah, it was by that sort of slow going process that we figured out how to make it all work.
Okay, so it is very experimental, like we've found with many other people in the community when they're trying to take their cats on boats or bike rides and so forth. It is just a case of pushing that envelope bit by bit, day by day. And you seem to have done that with your van catting lifestyle.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's about not rushing it. So when I was working on the van in my friend's driveway, Willow was free to explore around and she'd sort of poke her head in and see what I was up to. And it was that way that she sort of familiarized herself with the van and how she got used to it. So it wasn't a big step for us to, you know, for me to close the door and for us to drive somewhere.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I really like how Willow had that opportunity to like make herself comfortable while the van, like while you're still developing the van and getting it ready to go exploring as well. You mentioned that during those short trips, you started to learn what Willow would need while you're on the road. Do you mind taking us through a few things that you, like items and stuff like that, that you found that Willow needed?
Yeah, the biggest one is how to have water accessible to her all the time. So I solved this problem by getting a plastic kitchen container and cutting a circle in the lid, so that way when we're driving, the water doesn't splash around and sort of go everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it means I don't have to keep filling up a water container for her. So she's always got the water there to go. So that's one little trick.
Sorry, can we just jump into that a little bit? So
yeah,
it's just like a normal Tupperware container where you've cut a hole at the top?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's so smart. That's what we have, because just for a bit of background, when we did a recent road trip with our cats, we tried to give them water, but like their crate just kept getting full of water because they kept filling. So that's such a smart idea. We need to do that.
Yeah. You just got to make sure the hole in the top can fit the cat's head so they can, you know, comfortably go in there. But yeah, we've gone on like the bumpiest roads and, you know, everything stayed dry. So yeah, it works.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah.
So did you have any other suggestions?
So I've got basically the largest cat carrier I could purchase, which is placed under my sink. And if she needs to travel in there, that's just always set up ready to go. Because there are various state laws saying that, you know, a cat needs to be contained whilst driving. So I guess that's somewhat open to interpretation. Because if she's just started her 12-hour nap on the bed under the doona, she's somewhat contained already. So yeah, I don't know. I've never been pulled up on it, but you know, it's there just in case. And there are times when I do put her in there if I'm sort of opening the doors all the time, getting in and out, and it's a place where I don't want her to sort of get out, I'll keep her in the carrier.
That's awesome. What do you know what type of carrier it is?
Ooh, I'm not sure. I got it at one of the big pet stores. Yeah, it's like one of the, airline approved sort of things.
Because carriers is always a challenge as well, because there's so many out there. So I'm always like curious as to what everyone's using. But that's awesome that you found a spot for her carrier. What about kitty litter?
Yeah. So only recently have I got a tray in the van. I was always sort of put off by the idea of her using the tray whilst I'm in the van, because it is, I guess you call it, a confined space. So not very pleasant. But in the first half of the trip, we survived pretty well. But if she ever wanted to go to the toilet during the night, she's reliant on me waking up and going outside and, you know, disturbing my sleep. And yeah, it worked pretty well. But I was like, I really wanted to sleep through the night for once. And this was after 3 years of dealing with this, you know, sometimes multiple times during the night going out. And it's hard to work out whether she actually needed to go to the toilet or just wanted to, you know, chill out outside for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So now I've got another like kitchen tub with quite deep sides. It's probably almost a little bit too small for her. If I find like a slightly better size, I might buy one at Kmart or Big W or wherever. But yeah, just fill that up with, at the moment I'm using the crystal cat litter, mm-hmm. and that seems to do pretty well.
Okay, that's awesome. So for like in our car, we actually use a big Kmart Tupperware container, so like we can close it up. They've got like a really big one. So for our listeners around the world, Kmart and Big W, I suppose. Oh, I don't know what an
like big box department stores kind of thing.
Like, yeah, but then similar, like a bit cheaper. Yeah, yeah, like price range. End. Yeah, but they've got some pretty awesome like containers and. Well, they've got everything, really. Yeah.
Yeah. The greatest thing about the tubs is that you can put a lid on it. But I always have freak out moments where I'm where I've left her in the van to go shopping. And I'm like, did I take the lid off the tray? And then I'd run back just in case she wanted to go.
Kitty Cat Chronicles. So Emily, she who was on season one of our podcast, she's actually put a hole in her her big container for the kitty litter. So that might be an idea so that Willa can go in, but then I suppose you can't really close it up to get rid of the smell.
Yeah, true. I think it would still work because you've got the plastic, you know, I use a liner as well on it as well. Okay. So that would probably work as well. But yeah, you have to think, I mean, Willow's 8 years old at the moment. So, you know, we're entering middle age together. and, you know, as she gets older, I've got to make sure that her needs are met in that regard. So she might, you know, in the next couple of years might need a bit more help.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
and they tend to get set in their ways a little bit. Okay, so you also mentioned that Willow goes exploring. And one of the things that Willow does is that she explores off leash and we know that this is a deliberate decision that you've taken. Do you mind talking us through that process and how do you decide whether it's a safe location for it to explore in?
Yeah, well, I guess people's perception of Australia is there's sharks, snakes, crocodiles everywhere. And in many ways, they're right. So, we're very careful where we let her out. So, you know, if it's a place with like long grass, that sort of gives me the worries. But generally, I'm very lucky that she doesn't stray very far. So if I let her out, it's rare that she'll go more than 10 or 20 meters away from the van. So as long as the area around the van I can see is clear, and you know, it's not like in a car park where there's lots of traffic, then I'm quite happy to just to let her out.
That's awesome, and I think part of the reason that she doesn't stray so far is that she's got such a great bond with you as well. And you guys have such great, like, you trust each other and things like that. And you speak a little bit about that in your book too. Do you mind telling us how you discovered that you have a great bond and how she trusts you?
Oh, well, yeah, there's lots of stories. I mean, I guess people always say, why doesn't she run away? I'm like, why would she run away? Like, I'm an okay guy. So I guess, I mean, for us who are exploring with their cats, it just seems like a silly question. But I guess for other people, they're used to their cats just running away. But Willow's so bonded to, I guess, me and also the van. Like, she just knows it's her home. So whenever we park up, if I let her out, I know that if she feels frightened or she's uncertain, she'll just come back to the van, whether she jumps in the side or hides underneath. She knows that it's her safe place.
Yeah, I suppose that's very similar to the way we find Lumos and Oxy, you know, treat their backpacks and now their stroller. As the safe spot that when we go exploring, if they're scared, they just jump back in. So the van, I suppose, by extension, is just a larger, you know, backpack in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's certainly her safe spot. But, I mean, the problem I've found lately is that it's probably she finds it a bit too comfortable, in that she's exploring less and less, because she knows that, you know, life is good around the van. It's where she has her shade. It's where she has her treats and pats and all her cuddles. So, yeah, I've been trying to venture out a bit more with her lately.
So we mentioned about the prospect of losing Willow. Have you ever had a moment where you thought you lost Willow, and take us through how that experience and how you found her again?
Yes, I can. Unfortunately, when we're 30 days into our trip, we're coming up through Victoria after leaving Tasmania, and we're parked on the Murray River, which is a beautiful spot. And I let her out, and I was just sort of doing a bit of work on the van, a little project I was working on, and I was keeping an eye on her, but she'd sort of go off into the bush and then come back. And she did this about, you know, two or three times, and it got to about 10 o'clock and I was like, where is she? I couldn't find her. And in short, I didn't find her again for 3 days. So 30 days into my trip, I've lost my cat, and I was absolutely horrified.
Wow.
Yeah. So what did you do after that? Like, in those 3 days?
Yeah, well, I mean, apart from crying and panicking, I had a tracker, a radio frequency tracker on her collar, and I could basically walk around and if I'm within about 100 meters, I'd be able to get the signal and I'd work out where she was. But I couldn't get the signal. And I was I didn't get a signal until the second day, the end of the second day. And I was walking along this track, which I'd sort of spent the whole day walking around, and, you know, suddenly it lights up and there's a few beeps. And so, like, I'm, you know, excited that I found her. So I run towards her, and this scares her off, and she just moves further and further into the bush. And yeah, I lose the signal and any hope of finding her that night. So it wasn't until the next night that I sort of figured she'd be out and about at that hour. So I went out again and found the signal, and just very quietly whispered, you know, Willow, please come home. And she just walked. I got the signal on the tracker, and she just slowly walked up to me, and then I grabbed her and didn't let her go.
Oh, I can imagine the relief that you felt when you saw her then. Like, oh, that would have been a very scary few days.
Yeah, but yeah, without the tracker, it would have been a lot more difficult. And there's that was the tracker I had then was the Tabcat, and that's a really good product. But the distance is quite limited. But it's the tracker that I use the most with Willow, because I can quickly see where she is, and it's also pretty cheap to buy. Well, you know, reasonable price to buy. But there's another tracker called the Marco Polo, which I also use. And the coolest thing about this one is that you can put it into monitor mode. And if she goes like a certain distance away from the van, it'll start beeping. So it sort of gives me the confidence to, you know that she's outside. And if she does sort of move around, then I can quickly go out and check where she is.
Okay. So then we've now mentioned the trackers, it sounds like she's always got a tracker on her, is that right? So that when she does go off leash, it's not like you've got no idea where she is. It's a case of just following that tracker.
Yeah, I'd never let her off the leash without a tracker. No way.
That's a very important piece of the puzzle for going off leash.
Yeah, it's so much. I mean, the Tabcat has a range of like 100 meters, and you might not think that's a lot, but given how many places a little cat can hide in a small area, it's the difference between finding your cat and not finding your cat, pretty much.
Yeah, definitely. So just for everyone's understanding, so the Tabcat and the Marco Polo, I believe they're both radio frequency trackers. Is that correct?
Yes. The technology they use is radio frequency. And I guess people instantly think of GPS for locating a cat. But GPS I don't recommend because, firstly, a cat is likely to, you know, find a little spot to hide and just stay there or nap for 22 hours or whatever. So it works well with dogs because they're likely to move around. But for cats, because the GPS isn't very accurate, it's not a technology that works very well. So the radio frequency is, you know, I think it's far more superior.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also, I suppose GPS requires like cellular, like mobile reception. So a lot of Australia, when you're out there, it's not, the reception's not the best. So
yeah. So with GPS, it can either use the phone network to sort of pass on the coordinates of the tracker of the collar to you. Or could you? There's a few which actually use radio frequency, which means that you can use them without without phone coverage, but still, it's still quite inaccurate because if the device is under a log and it's cloudy, it could be 50 meters inaccurate.
Yeah, definitely, I understand that one. So, with the am I correct in my understanding that with both the Marco Polo and the Tabcat, there's a little attachment that you put, like you attach to Willow's collar?
Yeah, both of them have a the Tabcat is a little silicon I don't know what you call it, a little silicon casing that you wrap that you put around the collar or put the collar through it, and the Marco Polo has it's made out of cloth and Velcro.
Okay.
So yeah, the Marco Polo, it's a bigger unit. So it might not be suitable for like a really small cat, but to small, medium, large cats, it's much better for.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then I know with the Tabcat you have like a receiver that kind of helps you find them. Is that the same with the Marco Polo as well?
Yeah, same deal. So there's another product called the Findstar, which has a device which attaches to the collar, and then another device which you can keep with you, which your phone connects to via Bluetooth. So that you actually connect to with your phone, and you'll be able to see it on a map where they are. But yeah, I've used that a little bit, but it's not accurate enough for what I want it to do.
Okay, that's pretty cool that it's also got like a phone connection as well. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, people like the phone. They think it's pretty cool to have a phone app, but it's totally not necessary. It's a cool feature, and there's always other features in some of them, like activity monitoring and stuff like that, seeing how active your pet is. But like at the end of the day, who cares? What you want it to do is to be able to find your pet when you need it to.
Yep, exactly. That's such a good point. I suppose talking about activity and things like that, I saw the other day that you took Willow hiking. I've forgotten what mountain it is in Brisbane, but it's quite a beautiful area. Do you mind taking us through how Willow goes hiking and what process you take and stuff like that?
Yeah, so this is a new thing for us. Part of our endeavour to get Willow away from the van and get me out of the van as well. So get us out into the world a bit more. So I was looking for a sort of a way for her to have that comfortable, that safe place whilst we're away from the van. And I was thinking of getting like a backpack or something like that, but I couldn't find anything which would suit me. And I didn't like the idea of the backpack where you couldn't see sort of what she was up to and how she's doing. So I had the idea of finding like over the shoulder satchel that I'd be able to put her in. But that was a challenge in itself. And what I ended up getting was a nappy bag, or I guess our US friends would call it a diaper bag. from another discount department store in Australia, and the problem with it was It's the perfect bag because it's got all these pockets, and the bag itself is big enough for her. It's perfect size. But the problem I had was that when I was walking with her, the edges, the sides of it sort of pushed in, and it didn't look like she was that comfortable. So what I did was I bought some metal mesh and sort of bended it into a frame, which I could insert into it, and then she sort of, yeah, it sort of made it so the sides wouldn't fall in and she'd be comfortable. So we've taken this on a few trial walks, and one of them was up to a mountain near Brisbane, and it was I guess I was out of my comfort zone because we'd never tried anything this big before, and I think it was about four kilometer return walk, and I carried her pretty much all the way. But yeah, she did really well. And when she was, if we passed a scary dog, she'd sort of duck down and she'd be able to hide where she felt safe. But most of the time she just poked her head out and watched what was going on. And yeah, it was really good.
That's good to hear that she took to it so well and that she enjoyed it. So I can imagine this bag. So it's an over the shoulder bag. Is that right? So it's like a sling type that you use. Then in that case, is that right?
That's exactly it. It's what mothers will put all their the baby equipment in, all the nappies and bottles and towels and all that stuff. But it was a rather sort of neutral design, and I've since decorated it with patches and little souvenirs from our travels.
Oh, that's cool. So then, do you keep the bag on your side?
Yeah. So it's okay. With the strap, it sort of sits about at my hip level.
Right.
So yeah. She's not sort of like bouncing around if it was any lower.
Okay.
And so, yeah, she'll be on my side.
Okay. And then do you have any weight distribution issues, given that it's only on one side?
Yeah, not yet. I imagine if I did a lot of walks, my back would start hurting. But, you know, for what we've done so far, it's been all right. But if you're talking about taking like an 8-kilo cat with you, I reckon it would be problematic. So the owners there with larger cats, yeah, might not be suitable for. But I think for the 5 to 6 kilo cats, it's all right.
Yeah, and I suppose the one thing to bear in mind was this was like one of your first hikes. So as Willow gets more comfortable, she might spend more time hiking with you, so
yeah,
that will make it a bit easier. So
yeah. I'm definitely hoping so. So I don't have to carry it the whole time.
And give her a bit of exercise getting out of the van as well, so that would be pretty cool. Recently I saw that you posted that Willow was in a field where cane toads hang out, and for those who might not be aware, cane toads were introduced to Australia to eat the beetles on sugarcane crops, but the whole process sadly misfired, and the cane toads have been wreaking havoc to all our native animals and also for pets, because they're quite poisonous, and because cats see them as a fun thing to catch and then they get poisoned with them. And like you mentioned before, that's just one of the dangerous animals in Australia. I think Australia is known for having all the scary snakes, spiders, everything. And Willow stays away from the cane toads, but how do you keep her safe from other animals that you might encounter while you're traveling? Like, does she have a sixth sense, or how do you keep her safe?
Yeah, so we've been staying at a property up near Brisbane in their paddock, and at night there's just cane toads absolutely everywhere, and Willow will come out for me if I'm taking photos. And yeah, she won't sort of she won't interact with them, which is good. I think she knows they're there, but yeah, she doesn't try and eat them or anything like that. But I actually feel a bit sorry for the cane toads because they didn't really choose to come here.
Yes, that's very true.
They're just stuck here and no one likes them. So I actually quite enjoy taking photos of them, but yeah, that's another matter. But yeah, with Willow, she's not much of a hunter, so I don't really have to worry about her, you know, playing with spiders or snakes, and because I've always got her monitored with the tracker, I don't have to worry about her sort of going off and roaming. So as long as I keep an eye on her, and she'll be all right. And like during the day, I let her out, and I pretty much know that she'll either go under the van or on top of the van, and she'll be there for like 12 hours. So yeah, I don't really have to worry too much.
That's awesome. Because that, like when we've been traveling with Lumos and Noxy, that is something that I worry about, because like we don't travel as much as you, so we're not as good at picking out what the poisonous animals are or things like that. And like, for example, we went to the beach and Noxy went chasing after a crab, and I was just like, I don't know anything about this crab, so I had to grab her and take her away and be like, no, the crab's not there. So that's awesome that Willow is so well behaved in that aspect. And so one thing that I like is that you guys get to see some of the most beautiful parts of Australia, but from our personal experience, it's really challenging to find cat-friendly places in Australia. And like, and when I say cat-friendly places, I mean places to visit as well as accommodation as well. I suppose accommodation is not an issue for you guys, but I suppose it might be a bit of a challenge to find places to visit. Like, for example, Australian national parks aren't cat-friendly. So how do you normally find places for to take Willow and places to stay?
Yeah, so there's many places where cats aren't welcome, which I understand because, it's the best thing for the environment, and their perception of pet owners is probably people with dogs who let them roam, and I guess feral cats as well. That's their impression of cats. So they're not prepared for people who keep their cats on leashes and monitor them. So it's just something we've got to deal with. But mm-hmm. there's so many other places that we can go which are just as good and with less people. Because the best thing about traveling is to find these amazing places, and there's nobody around. It's just quiet and it's beautiful and it's great. So that's part of the challenge, and also the reward is that we get to go to places which we didn't know existed, and it's great. But there are still lots of parks and reserves and campgrounds which will allow cats, and we stayed in an Airbnb. That's an easy way to find a place to stay, because you can actually check in the filters to allow pets, and it'll show everywhere. But yeah, there's quite a few. I guess that they're probably not prepared to receive a cat either. So I usually email ahead and sort of tell them what my situation is, and it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's Airbnbs, and in Australia we've got Stays, which is an online platform as well, similar to Airbnb, which is now Home Away, I think. And it's great. You can filter by pet friendly, and then there's reviews. So I always check the reviews to see if they mention a pet indoors, because some of them say pet friendly, but it's only pet friendly in the garden as well.
Yeah, and, not good for cats.
Yeah, not great for cats. So that's been a really awesome way to find places. I read in your book that you sometimes stay on properties and things like that. How do you find those properties? Because I imagine they're like personal properties.
Yeah, so the best way is to volunteer your time in exchange for accommodation. So there's a few schemes. People have probably heard of Woofing, Wheeling Workers on Organic Farms. Okay. So that's one scheme where they get people and give them accommodation and their meals and in exchange for the work. So there's another one which I've used called HelpX, and that's probably more focused on, it's a bit of a cultural exchange, meeting. It's a way to meet people from different cultures or different ways of life, and we've used that a few times to find places. And another good one is couchsurfing.com. So that's where I found the last place I've been staying, and yeah, that can work really well.
That's awesome. I didn't realize there were so many resources out there. So when you're looking at like those parks and reserves that you mentioned before, do you look online before you go to them to see if they're cat friendly, or do you turn up and then check their signs and stuff like that?
Oh, pretty much I check up before I go, because, yeah, the last thing you want is to arrive at a camp that you know, 7 o'clock in the evening, absolutely tired, and then realize that you can't stay there. So there's a lot of staring at my phone or my laptop. So yeah, sure you're enjoying the outdoors, but for a lot of the time you're glued to your phone researching.
Yeah, I really relate to that. So we're recording this in March 2019, and Daniel and I and our cats went on a road trip, and it looks like it's quite easy on the surface on social media that we just like went to all these places and they were cat friendly. But I actually did so much research beforehand and like got in contact with the place and just to check if they were cat friendly. And like, I have a spiel that I give now if it's like an Airbnb, like I talk about how they're clicker trained, how they're harness trained, how, and like all the things we bring. So we take a scratching pole and kitty litter and stuff like that. It does actually take a lot of time. So I relate to that.
Yeah, I just name drop my Instagram account, yes. And that sort of I don't know, I should be ashamed of that, shouldn't I? I've been using it to
That does mean that's a big help though, I suppose. Yeah. So that's a good thing.
I do it too. I share Lumos and Noxy's account. I'm like, if you want to see what we've done before, go here.
Yeah, because it's hard to explain in text. But if people see the photos, they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And another big help has been like if I've posted a photo from inside an Airbnb, I will send them the link to those particular photos as well so that they can see that we've traveled before. So, yeah, it just helps a little bit. Yeah.
It's all about preparation, and, yeah, that's exactly right in that a lot of people don't see the preparation involved, but to make things go more smoothly and to find – the most places where you will be successful in taking a cat, it does pay to prepare beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. And it also helps to do a little bit of research in the laws of the state or the region that you're in as well.
Yeah, it's a big problem for us, you know, the laws of, you know, where you're allowed to camp and all that stuff. It's a minefield.
Yeah, definitely.
So recently you were in Brisbane, and Australia in March 2019, which is when we're recording this, has had some hot weather, and you mentioned that Willow actually had a staycation at a cattery. Do you mind explaining why you made that decision?
Yeah, so the locals have been telling us that it's one of the hottest summers they've had in a long time, and I'm quite happy that we made it through, but there were a few days where we're heading on 40 degrees and, you know, it's quite humid, and it would have been, I guess I'd say it's unfair for Willow to sort of, you know, keep her in those conditions. So I was checking the forecast, and I knew this day was coming up. So I just booked her into a cattery and, you know, made sure that she was comfortable, and I was more comfortable because I didn't have to worry about sort of where we're parked. I could leave the van and go somewhere cooler. So yeah, we always have that option if the climate, you know, the weather does go crazy, that we can just board and yeah, we know it's going to be okay.
That's a really good point. We're in Sydney, which is south of Brisbane, but even those days, like, we struggled. It's usually a bit cooler here, but it was like this summer's been ridiculously hot. Have you had the opposite situation where you've been somewhere where it's been really cold?
The cold's not so much of a problem because the heat is just unescapable, but the cold, you can rug up, you can get another blanket, you can put thermal clothes on. So, yeah, it's not a problem. Willow just gets more and more cuddly, so I love it. She just finds the heat and just, yeah, cuddles up, so it's great. But, yeah, the van is insulated. So when I was converting it, I made sure that all the insulation was installed, and it can survive pretty harsh sun, like 35 degrees in full sun. We can sit inside comfortably, and you know, it still feels hot, but you know, it's manageable, and Willow's comfortable.
That's awesome. So when you decide, like, was that the first time Willow stayed at a cattery because of the heat? Like, is there anything in particular that you look for in the forecast to decide that it's time to send Willow to a cattery for the day?
She stayed in Catteries before when I've had to nip home back to Tassie, but this was the first time I've dropped her off because of the heat. So I can't remember what the question was.
That's all good. I was just more trying to understand trying to give everyone a bit of a checklist, I suppose, to how to decide whether to put your cat in a cattery while you're vanning.
Oh, yeah. So I'm always checking the weather to see what the forecast is going to do. So if it's going to be a hot day, I want to know where I'll be and if I'll be in a place where I'll be able to escape the heat. So, you know, if I'm stuck in the middle of a city, you know, it might be hard to find shade, and it certainly would be hard to find somewhere where I can let her out to cool down. So, yeah, definitely always thinking ahead as to where we'll be and, you know, where we can best manage the Australian climate.
Luckily, we don't have snow, that much snow, so that makes it a bit easier, I suppose.
Yeah. I think we're actually quite keen to get into the snow. Maybe this winter we'll head up into the colder regions and get some snow. Oh, Willow's cool. First so, snow like, experience.
That'd be really cool. So like the snowy mountains?
Yeah, quite possibly. Who knows?
Awesome.
That sounds fun. So then in between these extreme weathers of hot and cold, what do you normally do with Willow during the day? Like, do you leave her in the van when you go out, or do you take her with you always?
I generally leave her in the van. So at the moment, we're in the van at the moment, and she's just having a nap on the dashboard. And I could leave her there for the next 14 hours, and I reckon she'd be fine. So it's at the moment where we are, it's not very hot, so it's all right. But if we're... say we're in like Brisbane City and it's a 35 degree day, I'll be able to leave her for short periods. But you know, if I'm parked in the sun, you know, after an hour and a half, it's going to heat up in the van. So yeah, I can't leave her for too long.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Just out of curiosity, when you're in a city, where do you normally park the van?
Usually at friends' places, or if on a rare occasion, if we have to, we'll just get a sneaky night somewhere, like in an industrial estate or something like that.
Cool. Yeah. It's obvious. I suppose if you're at a friend's place, it makes it a lot easier. You can park under the shade or something like that. So you're not necessarily right in the middle of the CBD.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you've travelled a lot through regional Australia, and I imagine that you can go at times where you don't see another person, and then at other times, like we've just talked about, you're in cities and things like that, and that's quite a contrast. How does Willow adapt to the change between the two environments?
I think she adapts better than I do. Last year we had our sort of outback trek through outback Queensland, and part of that was spending 30 days off grid by ourselves. So that was a really good experience to sort of have that time alone and to be alone with your thoughts and all that. But at the end of it, I sort of how do I say it, valued human contact more than I did previously.
I understand
so,
that.
But it was a good experience to learn that, because I mean, as I'm an introvert, so I need my recharge time and all that. So it's it was good to sort of know what my limits were, and know that I actually am quite outgoing and do need social contact. But as for Willow, she handles it fine. If there's people around and they're quiet, like at a campground, you'll see that she'll want to go over and say hi and explore. Or if I'm already over there by a campfire, she'll come up and say hi. So, yeah, she just adapts to it well.
That's really awesome. Talking about people and interactions with people, in your book you mentioned quite a few memorable interactions that you've had with people along the way. Is there one that stands out for you?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, you meet so many so many people and so many different people, and so many of them are just nuts. But I mean, what I've loved most recently is meeting a lot of other cat owners and just learning about, you know, meeting their cats and learning about their bonds that they have with them and how they live together. And that's sort of that's been part of our part of my efforts to sort of be more social and get out into the world is, you know, meeting more people. So the past couple of months we've been meeting up with fellow Instagrammers and meeting their cats, and I've been doing little articles on them, and that's something I've really enjoyed.
That's awesome. Yeah, I did read like a couple of articles about Hello Pistachio, and
yeah. I love that cat so much.
Yeah, so do we. So we were lucky to meet Pistachio at the Cat Explorer picnic in November 2018, and oh my goodness, such a friendly cat.
Oh my God, I've never met a friendlier cat.
And his owner was just able to pick him up and carry him across, I think it was two or three lanes of traffic, and he was just so fine. I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm getting stressed watching how calm he is.
That cat can handle anything.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of stressful and scary situations, have there been any situations while you've been out on the road that have scared you, and what did you learn from those?
We do a pretty good job of staying out of trouble. And I don't know if that's my personality or the fact that we generally avoid people, but there's been a few times where I've got in trouble with the car, with the van. A few times I've been stuck in the tides. The tide's risen up and I've almost been stuck. That's been quite scary. One in particular was when I was cooking dinner and wasn't really looking outside, and realized that the tide in the mangrove had gone up by about a meter. And to get out of this area, I had to drive 400 meters through about a foot of water, slipping and sliding through this, this slippery dirt track. And yeah, eventually we made it to the other side, very relieved. So we've had a few misadventures like that, but nothing too crazy.
I think that's pretty amazing though. I would have never thought about checking for the tides in a mangrove area. Are mangroves, I don't know whether they have mangroves everywhere. They're like little roots that stick out of the ground. So do you now check for tides wherever you are?
I'd love to say I've learnt my lesson, but I mean, realistically, it'll probably happen again. But I mean, maybe I've got some more experience in driving out of it. Who knows? But yeah, don't know.
it's a good point. It's not something that you really think of, so yeah.
Well, Rich, we're just coming up towards the end of our episode, and before we let you go, we've got these fast four questions that we ask all our guests. So the first one is, what do you hope to see in the future regarding the movement of cats who explore with their humans?
Yeah, well, I'm loving that the line between indoor cats and outdoor cats has been blurred. You know, more people are taking them outdoors and they're doing it in a safe way. So I just want to see more of that. I want to see less outdoor cats and more indoor cats, which are spending heaps of time outdoors, supervised and on leash and with having lots of fun with their owners.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I completely agree with that one. So what's been the most entertaining comment that someone has said to you while you've been out and about with Willow?
We're not easily spotted. So Willow can be asleep on the roof of the van and people will walk past and they won't even know she's there. So one of the benefits of having a black cat is they're quite well camouflaged in the shadows. So, it's not often people will see her, but occasionally we'll be at a campsite and Willow will be, exploring just near the van, and I'll have my camera and someone will walk past and go, "Hey, I know you." So, yeah, that's happened a few times. You're that cat man.
That's what you should change your name to, the Catman.
I'd take that. Yeah, certainly.
That's awesome. Talking about, I suppose, Instagram and social media, what cat explorers inspire you?
Well, we've already brought it up. Hello, Pistachio.
Yes.
Yeah. If you haven't, if you're not on their Instagram, look him up, because he's just the sweetest cat and so much love, and just takes it all in, just like sits in a forest or sits on the beach, and yeah, just loves it. Love that cat. But there's also Lamington and Jammu. We've met them as well. They're on the Sunshine Coast. They're awesome cats.
Yeah, I love all three of them. We've already spoken about Pistachio, but I love the things that Lamington and Jammu get up to. And they live in like this, I swear, it looks like paradise. They live like they're climbing trees all day, and it's just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I call it the Jungle Palace. But if you're worried about snakes, yeah, maybe don't check out their Instagram.
So what product, service, or program has been a game changer for Willow?
I'd easily say the Marco Polo pet tracker, on specifically the monitor mode. So that has just been, given me a lot of peace of mind to be able to relax, knowing that, you know, Willow's where I left her, where she settled down for a nap.
Yeah, that's that would give you so much peace of mind. I completely understand that one. So, Rich, thank you so much for joining us today. It really has been a blast. Where can we follow you and Willow online?
Yeah, you can check us out at vancatmeow.com or Instagram and Facebook. If you type in vancatmeow with or without spaces, I think you'll find us. And we've also got signed copies of our book on our website if anyone's interested.
Yep, so the book is called Vancat Meow as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also available in bookstores around Australia as well.
Yep, and online as well. And you've got a few things that you've got up on your online store as well, on your website, don't you?
Yeah, we've got calendar season's over now, so we've got the book, and we've just put up greeting cards. So, the non-seasonal greeting cards, so they can be used for birthdays or whatever. So, yeah, quite proud of those. And we've got a few other little bits and pieces.
Yeah, they all look pretty awesome. And I believe that at times you're also raising funds for motor neuron disease, aren't you?
Yeah, so every so often we'll do a little fundraiser, and we'll, donate all the money. It's a cause which I wanted to raise money for, and I didn't want to just say, hey, people, give us your money, we'll give it to MND. I wanted there to be a good value exchange. So it was just easier for me to say, here are the products. If you buy this product, then all the money goes to MND. And I've got this goal of raising $10,000, and we're at just over $6,000 at the moment. So, yeah, it's going pretty well. Pretty happy with that.
That's awesome. So what we'll do is we'll put all those links and any other links to things that we discussed today in today's in the show notes, which will be available at catexplorer.co/podcast.
Thank you so much for listening today. It would mean the world to us if you could hit subscribe and review the Cat Explorer podcast on wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help us to continue to get some awesome guests. As always, thank you so much for being a part of the Cat Explorer community. That's it for today. We'll catch you next time. In the meantime, enjoy giving your kitty the world.